Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk listeners out there, this is Chocolate Lady 64, and I would love to tell you guys Happy Thanksgiving. I'm hoping you have stuffed yourself with turkey or ham or both, and that you're enjoying the company of your family and friends. A lot of you are probably off tomorrow, so you're going to get out there to the stores and get those bargains starting at 5 o'clock in the morning. Good luck to you guys, because I'm not getting out of my bed that early because I have to go to work in about 2 hours later, so I don't have a desire to catch any sales and bargains. I don't do a lot of Christmas shopping anyway, so I'm going to probably combine some of the history of the Federal Reserve, and we're going to talk about tonight, we're going to discuss H.R. 1207. Which is a bill that Ron Paul has put together and submitted to audit the Federal Reserve. And we're going to listen to, like as we've been doing earlier, listening to different videos, and that's what they are on YouTube, talking or discussing the Federal Reserve and what it entails. So from time to time, I will go back and forth with this. I think it's a good thing because then we'll find out where our money goes. According to some of the information, we are one step into the ideal that we will be able to do that. And one thing about it is that we know there's going to be a fight because everything, they don't want everything to be revealed. The governing bodies of the Federal Reserve, but it's good information that we will be getting out of this, hopefully, and I hope we can get exactly what we need out of this bill, and I hope everyone agrees to it. It needs to be done because of the collapse of our economy and how important it is for us to know that it's not our fault that our economy is like that, because, you know, we're made out to be the people, the reason why everything is not working, but really we're not. So, excuse me. It would have been nice if I could have contacted Ron Paul and talked to him and actually interviewed him over the radio, but that wasn't feasible at this time. Also, there with the bill that's out there, according to what I found out, it was 311 co-sponsors to the bill. And what I did was when I researched, I found that I had two representatives on there that actually signed on the bill. So for my state, I'm very grateful that two people, and I'm very pleased to know that two of our representatives did sign off on the bill. The way that you can find out if any of your representatives have signed off on the bill, you can go to ronpaul.com, and he has a list of the representatives that signed off on the bill. And you can see if your state was involved in that deal. We need to find out where do we stand with our money. The first video you'll probably hear from me, it's called Who Owns the Federal Reserve? Let's see. It's not very long, but I'm going to allow you to hear it. Just a second.
You know, what's sad about this, if you listen to both presidential campaigns, they're not talking about it. They're not talking about reducing the government spending and bringing the debt down. What I'm hearing is more
spending. I know,
more debt.
Okay,
yeah.
Peter, let me go to you on this, because I saw some pictures of, you know, at the Federal Reserve Bank, which is not a government institution. They have nothing to do with the federal government. It's a separate global banking system. When everybody was meeting this weekend with our Secretary of Treasury, I thought to myself, who the hell is in that room representing the United States of America? Everybody seems to be looking out for these banks, but who's out there looking out for the little guy?
No, look, the Fed got us into this mess. You know, it drives me crazy when I see Alan Greenspan on television talking about this 100-year flood. Like, the events that are taking place today are random, and they have nothing to do with his monetary policy. He blew up the bubble, now it's burst.
He created the bubble.
Yes, and you know,
he created the bubble with the easy money.
And why did we do that? We didn't want to suffer through the recession.
Right.
We should have had, after the bursting of the dot-com bubble, after 9/11, we should have taken our lumps then. We wouldn't have this problem today.
By the way, who elected Ben Bernanke and who elected Alan Greenspan? Nobody elected them.
I was just going to say, did anybody notice they're not talking about who was in that room representing you, America?
I consider the Federal Reserve Act and the creation of the Federal Reserve as being unconstitutional. It gave the government then the power to create legal tender out of thin air, that is, to create paper money. And although they didn't do that overnight, between 1913 and 1971, that is exactly what happened. But the notion of a central bank does not fit into the Constitution. The Congress has the authority to coin money, and only gold and silver should be legal tender. And this is an absolute contradiction of the Constitution to have a Federal Reserve system and a central bank. Not a lot of American people understand it, and I would add that probably not too many people here in Congress understand it either. I think they see it as a convenience. I think a lot of other people see it as a convenience because they think they're protected by the type of system that we have. But a fiat monetary system or a paper money system is merely a system where the government has this power and authority to dictate and insist that a piece of paper is legal tender. And even members of the banking committee have come up to me and they said, you mean our dollar isn't backed by gold anymore? Not realizing that the Federal Reserve really accommodates big government bureaucrats and politicians. If you think about the significance of the Federal Reserve Act being passed under those conditions, the American people didn't know, but it was banking interests that were behind it. Powerful banking interests because they wanted their assets protected. They wanted the Federal Reserve to be the lender of last resort. So if they had been loaning out and risking the money, these loans go bad, instead of having the market take care of this, they wanted bailed out. And this is why it was a tremendous popular thing to do for the bank. And of course, the big business people who are borrowing money. So it's very, very special interest directed, and it was designed for the elite. And even today, a lot of people don't quite understand that. So it's an educational job as well outside of Washington, but hopefully someday people here in Washington, especially the members of the banking committee, will gain some interest in the subject because ultimately we will have to address it. The inflation isn't rising prices. The inflation is the government's program of increasing the supply of money, which devalues the currency, and that causes the prices to go up. Inflation, that is the destruction of money, eventually wipes out the middle class. The best example in the 20th century being what we saw happen in Germany. As the runaway inflation came, the middle class got wiped out. In the early stages, of course, somebody benefited. Eventually, it hurts everybody. But in this country right now, we have constant insidious inflation. So there is a transfer of wealth from the poor and the middle class to the wealthy. But because it affects the business cycle and causes prices to go up in general, who suffers the most? The people who can afford it the least, that people on fixed incomes, low middle income people, poor people. I think it especially hits hard low middle income people who are trying to make it on their own and won't go on the dole because their prices go up more and they're the first ones to lose their job. When the business cycle turns down, the Federal Reserve, by increasing the credit, creates the boom part of the cycle. But then there's always the resulting downturn of the cycle when unemployment rises. But it's hard to predict, but I certainly think it's possible because I think the financial bubble worldwide is something that we have never experienced before. We've had tastes of that. But Alan Greenspan, in one way, is a genius. In another way, he is an unbelievable threat to us. He's a genius in the sense that in a technical fashion, he's been able to keep this system of inflation together longer than anybody else has been able to, especially in this last go-around from 2000 on. With the collapse of the NASDAQ bubble, we really didn't have much of a recession because he immediately started inflating massively, taking interest rates down to 1%. And now, of course, he's a little bit frightened about the bubble, and he's curtailing credit to some degree. But the dollar has become the gold of the world. The world central banks have accepted the dollar as if it were gold. Greenspan claims that they have gotten the paper money to act as if it is gold, which I strongly disagree with, and all the hard money people disagree with. But I believe he's been capable of creating this huge financial bubble, and the world has not yet seen what may come of this. So I suspect that depending on when it comes and what we do, it could very well end up into a much worse situation than the Great Depression. But if the country decided, well, something has to be done, and we went to a gold standard and limit the creation of credit, curtailed the power of the Fed, I think with all our difficulties, with Argentina periodically just quit inflating and made the tighter currency to the even the dollar, price inflation went like from hundreds of percent per year down to 2% and 3%, so it's rather rapid. So you would see an immediate benefit. You would iron out the severe swings in the business cycle. The price problems would be diminished. But one thing we'd have to give up, which to me would be a benefit, the government would have to curtail spending because they can't tax the people enough to pay for all those bills. So we would have to curtail our spending. So that would be, to me, a tremendous boost to the American people and to the economy. At the same time, we gave sound money. I mean, this would be fantastic. Within months, there would be some people who would suffer from the adjustment period, but it might be the people who have benefited so much over these years. But the average person, the poor person, the jobs would become available. So it would not take a long, long time. What would take a long time is if we refuse to consider it and the problems get worse and we have a severe recession or depression and huge inflation and we do all the wrong things. That is what we should work so hard against. People realize that the government's creating this money out of thin air, and you use the term loosely, printing, because they actually create credit, which is essentially the same as printing money. Most people realize, well, how can they do that? And most people know that counterfeiting is wrong and immoral and illegal. But here we have a system of money where we have permitted the politician, in collusion with the central bankers, to create unlimited amounts of money. Some weeks they create $30 billion in one week to accommodate this system. And Murray Rothbard in particular argued for the case for 100% gold coin standard, emphasizing the coinage of gold, which doesn't, a lot of people think, what does that mean, that to go to the store you have to carry heavy coins? No, but 100% gold coin standard means that if you carry certificates, they have to be 100% redeemable in gold. And this is what holds the government in check. If government tends to cheat and start printing too many certificates, then the people hold the government in check by turning in their certificate and say, we don't trust you, we want the gold. This is what happened in the 30s. And exactly what happened was that the government was called on it, and then what did the government do? They made the holding of gold illegal because it embarrassed the government, and they did it precisely to make government large. The Federal Reserve System introduced this notion that banks had to only hold a fraction of reserves in order to create credit. So that is another way where the government debases the currency. Not only do they print the money and create the credit, as it goes through the banking system, through fractional reserve banking, we further expand the supply of money, diluting the value of money, which is the inflation. The inflation isn't rising prices. The inflation is the government's program of increasing the supply of money, which devalues the currency, and that causes the prices to go up. There's a lot of examples where you have runaway inflation, prices are soaring, and the economy is in shambles. And that is what I fear will come to this country if we don't quit printing the money and creating credit, whether it's It's to fight wars that we shouldn't be fighting, or to bail everybody out in this country that needs something. And that's the way this place operates. They sort of like it. You know, they like it because, you know, I don't have to raise taxes, and somehow or another these bills get paid. Not understanding that when you dilute the value of money, it's really an immoral, deceitful tax on the people. But it will come to an end. If you study monetary history throughout thousands of years, you will find out that paper money has been tried many, many times, and it never succeeds. It always ends badly. The question is when will the dollar end badly? Will it be next year or in 5 years or 10 years? I'm convinced it will end.
Next on Special Report, Fox News is live at the Cover Center in Columbia, South Carolina, where later tonight, 10 GOP candidates square off for the Fox News First in the South presidential debate.
If you're one of the minor candidates, or what you consider the minor candidates right now, how do you punch through it?
One way to do that, of course, is to take on, in some way, one of the major candidates. Now, so far, that hasn't happened in any of these debates, really, on either side. I think Iraq will be a dominant issue. It's the issue of our era, and there's going to be a lot of questions about that.
As Fox reports live from Columbia, South Carolina, demonstrators for all the candidates are out, proving to be a blockbuster night.
You decide. 2008. The first in the South Republican presidential candidates debate. Live from the Coker Center on the campus of the University of South Carolina.
Congressman Paul, you're one of six House Republicans who back in 2002 voted against authorizing President Bush to use force in Iraq. Now you say we should pull our troops out. A recent poll found that 77% of Republicans disapprove of the idea of setting a timetable for withdrawal. Are you running for the nomination of the wrong party?
But you have to realize that the base of the Republican Party shrunk last year because of the war issue. So that percentage represents less people. If you look at 65 to 70% of the American people, they want us out of there. They want the war over. In 2002, I offered an amendment to international relations to declare war up or down, and it was nobody voted for the war. And my argument there was, if we want to go to war, and if we should go to war, the Congress should declare it. We don't go to war like we did in Vietnam and Korea because the wars never end. And I argued the case and made the point.
I apologize for that interruption there.
Ronald Reagan in 1983 sent Marines into Lebanon, and he said he would never turn tail and run. A few months later, the Marines were killed, 241 were killed, and the Marines were taken out. And Reagan addressed this subject in his memoirs. And he says, I said I would never turn tail and run. He says, but I never realized the irrationality of Middle Eastern politics, and he changed his policy there. We need the courage of a Ronald Reagan.
Brian from Fort Wayne asks this question via the Internet.
I apologize for that. I had to change over. To get to the information. Just a second here. I don't want to continue to play something that is detrimental to my computer. And in the meantime, let's see, do we have some information that is recent on the bill? Okay, here we go. Let's see what this one says.
History.
Just one second.
This is an historic hearing. The gentleman from Texas, Mr. Paul, filed this bill for the first time in 1983. There then ensued a number of things, including 12 years in which the Republican Party controlled the agenda of this committee and found no time for this hearing. So I am very pleased in this show of bipartisanship to have been the one to give this important piece of legislation its first hearing ever. Indeed, and I think this history is relevant because we ought to be very clear this is not a partisan issue. The first time this committee, in my experience, having come here in 1981, engaged with the Federal Reserve, and I think it really was true of the 70s and 60s as well. But the first time this committee dealt with the questions of openness and transparency of the Federal Reserve, it was under the leadership of the great chairman who's pictured over my right shoulder, Henry P. Gonzalez. In fact, a former chief economist for this committee, Robert Auerbach, has written a book, and I get no share of the proceeds, but it was Something and Deception at the Fed. Does anybody remember what the first noun was? But it wasn't pretty. And it was a description of the efforts by Mr. Gonzalez, ultimately successful, to compel the Federal Reserve to be more open. It's astonishing to me to remember that when I first came here, the decisions of the Open Market Committee were never announced. Now, how you influence interest rates by concealing from the market what you decide to do is very odd. What it shows is that the penchant for secrecy outweighed the desire to be effective, because it clearly could not have been as effective to have a secret directive to the markets, which, of course, got baked and distorted, et cetera. There were minutes that had been taken at Federal Reserve meetings. The Federal Reserve at the time, 1983, denied, in the later 80s, when Mr. Gonzalez became chairman, they denied that there had been minutes. They were later, quote, found in a drawer, unquote. There were not reports released. So this is not a new thing for this committee. There was an effort to open it up, and there was significant increased opening. The other point that is relevant, and I do want to say to make sure this is not a partisan issue, facts on the record, in 2003, the gentleman from Texas, Mr. Paul, was in line under seniority to be the chairman of the Domestic Monetary Policy Subcommittee. That subcommittee immediately disappeared. It was merged into the International Monetary Policy Subcommittee because there were people who were trying to shield the Federal Reserve from Mr. Paul's influence. 2 years later, when they could not merge that subcommittee further into the housing subcommittee, although they probably thought about it, a member of this committee with some seniority who had not previously taken a subcommittee chairmanship, Congressman Price, was persuaded to come over and do this. So this is the first time in since the bill was filed, and despite a bipartisan ignoring of the issue, that we have had the hearing, and we are serious about some legislation in this regard. I will say I have a couple of concerns. The Federal Reserve engages in considerable market activity. They buy and sell. I do believe that it is important in our society that that be made public. We don't want public entities buying and selling securities with nobody ever knowing. I also believe, however, that there needs to be some time to elapse so that their buying and selling does not have a direct market effect, that other people can't ride on it. So that's one area where I will be working with the gentleman in Texas, and we've discussed it. We want there to be publicity. We don't want there to be a market effect in the near term. We don't want people trading with the Fed or against the Fed, et cetera. As to monetary policy, I think it's also clear I believe and have exercised that right for some time to comment on monetary policy. The notion that no elected official should ever comment on something as important as monetary policy is profoundly anti-democratic. And I believe that we should continue to do that. It's something I've been doing since I got here. We don't want to give the rest of the world, or more important, domestic investors, the impression that we are somehow in a formal way injecting Congress into the setting of monetary policy, because I think that could have a very destabilizing effect. I don't think that will be hard to do without in any way interfering with the audit function. But how the Federal Reserve carries out what it's doing, it's buying and selling, what it buys and what it sells, all of those, given its importance, can entirely legitimately be made open. And I will say this, there were predictions. One of the things that the media fails to do, the media rarely passes up a chance to refute those of us who are in office, but they get bored too easily. There are often predictions of doom whenever people in Congress propose to do something. Very often those predictions of doom go unrealized, and there is too little checking. I urge people, if you are interested in this, go back to some of the predictions that were made in the late 80s when, under the leadership of Henry Gonzalez, the Fed was not, we didn't legislate, but pressured to make some changes. Read about the predictions of doom and note that none of them came to pass. I believe that we are similarly able in a wholly responsible way without being in any way interfering with the independence of the monetary policy setting function or with the integrity of the markets to go forward with completing the job. And I would say completing the job. They really did begin with Henry Gonzalez, but completing it, and a lot needs to be done, and the gentleman from Texas has been in the lead in pushing for that, of making sure that this important part of our federal government is subjected to the same rules of openness that every other element in a democratic government should be. The gentleman from Texas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for calling these hearings finally. So this is very good that we're having this today. I would like to say that at the present time, we have 295 co-sponsors of the bill in the House, and a recent poll showed that 75% of the American people support the auditing of the Fed. But I wanted to start, too, with a little bit of history. In 1981, we were holding a gold conference hearing, and the very first hearing, Don Regan was in charge of it. And he insisted that no media be allowed and no guests would be allowed and no records be kept. And that got out on the outside, and due to public pressure, the meetings were finally open. And his argument was, well, it would affect interest rates, it would affect the dollar, and it would be detrimental to the market. So a lot of these arguments are thrown out there unnecessarily. But too often we equate this idea of independence with secrecy. If we substitute the word secrecy every time we talk about independence, we'll know what we're talking about. One time many years ago, Arthur Burns was asked about whether or not the Fed had to do what the president wanted. And he said, obviously it does, or it would lose its independence. And that's about it. It is very, very politicized, but it's done in secrecy. The president has influence, and we do know that. There's been books written about this. As well as what's happening now, there is a political influence by private companies and banks and foreign governments and foreign central banks, and the American people deserve to know this. One of the charges made is that if we have these audits, all of a sudden we're going to take over monetary policy. And Chairman Frank and I, as he had just stated, we talked about this. We're going to make it very, very clear that it's not our intent to take over monetary policy. But quite frankly, the way the bill is written, I don't believe we could, and I don't believe we should either. Although there's two sides of this issue arguing for the audit, we don't necessarily agree with what monetary policy we should have. So that is not the issue here. But one thing one should think about is this argument that if we have an audit, we're going to influence policy. How many audits does the GAO perform in all agencies of government, in the State Department, in the DOD? Nobody's ever charged the GAO for altering policies. So I don't think that is a fair charge that we would be taking over policy. Actually, transparency conveys trust. It was found that in these recent bailouts, instead of it hurting companies if they knew they were being helped by the government, it actually helped those companies. Their stocks went up rather than saying that they became tainted just because they knew they were talking to the Federal Reserve or to treasuries. So today we have before us a bill that actually offers us an opportunity that people have been fighting for a good many years. Chairman of the Banking Committee, Royce, as well as Wright Patman and Gonzalez, they have all argued this case, but the conditions today merit serious consideration for this bill and passage of a bill like this. The American people know it, and they understand it better than ever before because of the crisis of the financial system. It's not because of me. Like it was said, I did it for a good many years and nothing happened, but the financial crisis has gotten the attention of the American people, and the American people say, not only do you have a right to do this as a member of Congress and as Congress itself, you have an obligation to do this. So I am delighted that we have gotten to this point, and I am sure that we will have a positive discussion today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The gentleman from North Carolina.
Thank you.
How much time has he consumed?
I First of all, I want to thank the chair for convening this hearing and doing so at the full committee level. Chairman and I have had some discussions about whether to do a hearing of this kind at the subcommittee level or at the full committee level, and I think the chairman is correct that this is a subject that deserves.
That was Ron Paul putting it on the line about what we need to do as far as the H.R. 1207. I'm going down because I'm looking at the bill itself in front of me, and it is considered a transparency bill. And as they've been explaining, the reason why we need this bill so that we can tell the American people the truth about the money and how important it is for us to know where our money is going and what's going on with our money and what is backing our money. And as Representative Ron Paul said, it would be easier if we go back to the gold standard, and each time they print money, it's in a debt that's being created opposed to it helping us, it's hindering us, and it's stalling us, and it's bringing up our inflation. Now, we definitely have to keep in mind, we definitely have to keep in mind the importance of this bill. So far, the video I just played to you said it was 298 co-sponsors. Well, that was old. That was like over a month or so ago. As a matter of fact, they're up to 311 co-sponsors. And what I'm trying to do is I'm going to try to find one. Also, Bernanke has, it's also a bill called S604 that's part of the H.R. 1207. It's also together with that bill. So that is very important to know that these bills, we need to really take heed to what's going on. We're so caught up and distracted by society and what's going on with reality shows and all that, that we really don't know. We're being raped, pillaged every day on a daily basis with our credit, with our money, with our jobs. We are actually really, really being ripped off. And we have to very much so pay attention to what's going on. Let's see. I have another one that was produced 3 weeks ago. Let's see. And it's dealing, he's explaining what is happening with the H.R. 1207, why it's sitting in a monetary policy subcommittee, okay? This is Ron Paul again. Just 1 second here.
I'd like to give you an update on 1207. For the last couple of weeks, I have been talking with Mel Watt, the chairman of the Monetary Policy Subcommittee, in dealing with 1207. And it seemed like they were reasonable discussions, but I never expected a whole lot to come from this. I've never expected as much support from Mel Watt as I believe I can and hopefully still get from Barney Frank. But the way the process works is a subcommittee does get first crack at it. What happens in the full committee is a different story, and we don't know exactly what will happen. But there's no doubt that Mel Watt is not interested in 1207. And I don't think he's all that bashful about speaking for the Federal Reserve, because that was in the conversation quite frequently, that he was trying to satisfy all parties, including the Fed. But that shouldn't surprise any of us. They are very, very powerful and very, very influential. But when he took 1207 and marked it up and sent it back to me, obviously it was something I could not support. Although there were two items in it that were rather minor that both he and I have agreed to, but it's not as significant as as it should be. The one part, though, was having a time frame on when we could look at certain procedures of the Federal Reserve, and that was accepted. But the fact that they took away the audit itself, those numbers don't mean a whole lot except in one area, and that's dealing with the 13-3 lending facilities that the Federal Reserve has more or less conceded that they're going to have to reveal what has happened there. But that is minor. Matter of fact, 1207 doesn't even mention 13-3 there. We're mainly talking about an overall audit of overall policy and monetary policy and arrangements overseas. So that, ironically, actually helps the Fed, putting a time limit. I believe they more or less has conceded that we will get to know what's happening with their lending facilities. But with the time lag on there of 6 months, it actually helps them. So as what happens so often in legislation is you start out with one goal and you end up making things actually worse. And that's what they're trying to do. This would actually help the Fed under current circumstances. So my job and our job is to stick to what we want, and that is a true audit. Now, it is likely to come up soon. Next week we're supposed to start working on the overall reform package for all the financial institutions. And because Malwa is the subcommittee chairman, he gets to insert his provision in there on what we're going to do with the Fed. Now, when he does that, I will have the opportunity to replace it and amend what he's done with 1207, and obviously I will be doing that. Now, it looks like we have the upper hand, at least on the surface we do. From the Banking Committee, we have all of the Republican members who have co-sponsored the bill, but we have 13 Democrats. So we have a good, solid majority in the committee that should support us. That's not always the way things work. Sometimes people support legislation for political reasons back home, and at the same time, when they have to vote on it, they vote differently when their arms get twisted. I believe it's going to boil down to how strong a position Barney Frank takes on this, and I plan to talk to him. I'm still talking with him, and we have cordial relations, and I'm sure he's going to have to take a position one way or the other. So I don't think he's as strongly opposed to what I'm doing as Mel Watt is. So the amendment will come up. So if people can influence their congressman and think you can figure out which 13 are already co-sponsors, they have to be urged. I only urge courtesy and not threats or anything like that, that the end of the world is going to come if they don't do what you tell them to do. I still think we have to work through this the best we can diplomatically. Like I said, I'm not surprised this has happened, but let's say we are successful and we get it amended, we still have to bring it to the House floor, and then they have a chance to water it down again. It goes through Rules Committee, that's another place, has to go to the Senate. It's having a harder time in the Senate. Then it has to go to a conference committee, and there's another problem, and then it has to go to the president. And even if it goes through all that, we still have the courts to deal with, and courts have never been friendly to those of us who want honest money. They were never friendly to the people who held gold clause contracts and believe the government should renege on their promises. But nevertheless, this is crucial. This is really important. This whole thing might take a year or two to play out, but it might only take a year for the dollar to play out. So this is why it's so crucial. If the dollar doesn't last very long and something has to come up to replace the dollar or have a new system, we have to be in that debate, and that means we have to pursue this. So it is crucial. Instead of becoming a little bit discouraged with this or think that this is very strange, this is really rather typical. The special interest comes in at the last minute, and this time it's the special interest banks and the big corporations who love to have inflationary programs that finances of, say, the military-industrial complex. And they will have to, come to a decision on what they're going to do. So I would say that the process is working as more or less the way I expected. This is going to be a very important week. But the whole issue of sound money and limited government and liberty and the Constitution actually that concern is not going to go away no matter what happens in the next couple weeks or so. But we will gain a lot of momentum if we can at least restore the language of 1207 in the banking reform bill, which will be in the House committee next week.
Let's see. There's another one I wanted to listen to.
What's your name?
Audrey.
Audrey? How do you spell it?
A-U-D-R-E-Y. That's my cousin's name.
You know what? We need a better pen. Yeah, I think it's the photo quality paper here.
Let's go and talk about that one right there.
Thanks, dude. Sorry to bother you, man. Oh, you don't bother me.
Here, what would you do?
You hear them talk about Ben Bernanke. Bernanke is his name. He's the one who's very against this. But let's see what he's got to say on this.
We have spent a lot of time in Congress talking about the $700 billion TARP bailout. I voted against, as it happens. Not a whole lot has been talked about with regard to the $2.2 trillion that the Fed has lent out. Now, I find that absolutely extraordinary that I wrote you a letter and I said, hey, who'd you lend the money to? What were the terms of those loans? How can my constituents in Vermont get some of that money? Who makes the decisions? Do you guys sit around in a room? Do you make it? Are there conflicts of interest? So my question to you is, will you tell the American people to whom you lent $2.2 trillion of their dollars? Will you tell us who got that money and what the terms are of those agreements?
We explain each of our programs. In terms of the terms, we explain the terms exactly. We explain what the collateral requirements are. We explain what
to whom did you explain that?
It's on our website.
Yeah.
Okay. So all that information is available in our commercial paper program.
And who got the money?
Hundreds and hundreds of banks. Any bank or that has access to the U.S. Federal Reserve's discount.
Tell us who they are.
No, because the reason that it's counterproductive and will destroy the value of the program is that banks will not come to the...
Well, isn't that too bad?
Sorry?
In other words, isn't that too bad? They took the money, but they don't want to be public about the fact that they received it. We heard a whole lot about AIG. They're on the front pages.
These are very
now, I got banks, and I have businesses in the state of Vermont who are in a lot of trouble. Not banks. Our banks, by the way, are doing pretty well. Now, how do these guys who are honest business people get it? Do you have to be a large, greedy, reckless financial institution to apply for these monies?
There is no subsidy. There is no capital involved. There is no gift involved. It is a collateralized, short-term liquid loan that is both over-collateralized and is recourse to the company itself. We have never lost a penny doing it.
And how can other institutions get those loans as well?
According to the law, we are supposed to be lending to depository institutions.
Let me just say this, Mr. Chairman. I have a hard time understanding how you have put $2.2 trillion at risk without making those names available, those institutions public. And we're going to introduce legislation today, by the way, to demand that you do that. It is unacceptable to me that that goes on. Mr. Chairman, one of the issues that bothers me very much is that for many, many years, some of us were concerned about deregulation. Some of us were very concerned about where the economy was going. We didn't hear much coming from the Bush administration, who told us over and over again that the fundamentals of the economy were sound. We didn't hear much from the Fed. Now, looking back, do you think that maybe there was a problem there that you did not raise some alarms out there and said, we got a problem when trillions of dollars are being floated around the world in a deregulated non-transparent way. When you heard people talking about the fundamentals of the economy being sound, how come you didn't raise an alarm?
Well, there was a massive credit crisis, and it's been true that our regulatory system and our financial supervisory system did not succeed in preventing those impacts. And I think it's very important that
did not succeed in preventing them. Let's take it another way. Do you think that the repeal of Glass-Steagall was a tragic mistake?
No, I don't think so. But I do think we need to have much more effective holding company and oversight supervision, and I strongly support a strong program of regulatory reform going forward.
Mr. Chairman, in my state, people ask me how it could be that you're providing loans at almost zero interest rates to large financial institutions who are then charging consumers 25 or 30% interest rates on their credit cards. Do you think that that's acceptable, or do you think that those institutions that are receiving help from the Fed should substantially cut those interest rates?
Well, with respect to credit cards, we've been working actively in that area in a couple of dimensions. One is that credit card credit availability will be enhanced by our TALF program, which I've just
announced. No, but you're not answering my question. Should a financial institution that is being bailed out by taxpayers charge those taxpayers 25 or 30% interest rates when they're receiving?
Well, you need to address that to the Treasury because it's the TARP that's providing help to failing or damaged firms. The Federal Reserve lends to healthy firms on a collateralized basis.
Last question. Many, again, of my constituents, and I think people all over this country, are wondering why the CEOs of these large financial institutions who have been extremely greedy, reckless, and maybe have engaged in illegal behavior have not been fired so that we can work with people who want to really reform the system. Should the CEOs of the financial institutions that have led us into this deep, deep recession be fired?
Well, pay and job tenure should depend on performance, and those that should perform poorly should lose their jobs. Many have lost their jobs.
Well, most of them, of the major guys, are still holding their positions.
Now, as you can see, according to that interview, that was Ben Bernanke and Bernie Sanders of Vermont, the representative Bernie Sanders from Vermont, who was asking the questions to Senator Bernanke, Chairman Bernanke of Bernanke, I can't say this right, Bernanke, of the Federal Reserves, and how he stammered and he really didn't answer the questions that what Mr. Sanders was asking him. This is the stuff that we're dealing with on a daily basis, with trying to find out what's going on with our money. I wouldn't want to be in his shoes with this whole situation because it's dangerous, and people are really, really starting to pay attention. I don't know if I explained to you why are we trying to audit, or why Representative Ron Paul is trying to audit the Federal Reserve. He wants to pull back the curtains from a secretive and unaccountable Federal Reserve. Congress and the American people have a minimum, if any, oversight over trillions of dollars that the Fed controls. With recent bailout and spending decisions shining a spotlight on the action, of the Federal Reserve, more and more pressure is bearing down on Congress to take action and demand accountability and transparency. Auditing the Fed is only the first step towards exposing this antiquated insider run creator to the power forces of the free market competition. Once there are viable alternatives to the monopolist, fiat dollar, the Federal Reserve will have to become honest and transparent if it wants to remain in business. So do you see how important it is for us to keep abreast of this bill I'm reading at the same time I'm talking. And how the American people, we need to wake up, we need to look around, we need to know what is happening. it's so scary that we have our future in the hands of people who really are greedy, who really don't want to have, really don't care what happens to us. They really don't. They want to continue doing what they're doing and getting rich and making things happen for them and not looking at us, at what we're having to do and how we have to survive. You think of all the different jobs that have been lost. I found something else. Let me let you hear this one real quick here. Let's see.
Now we don't know.
I'm sorry, Congressman. It's Becky Quick. I had a question for you. When you start thinking about the need to raise interest rates, the argument has always been that politicians would not do it because it's never a politically popular decision to raise interest rates. It makes it more expensive to buy houses, to get a loan for a small business, to get a loan for a car. So if you don't have someone who's, if you have people who are standing election trying to make those decisions, how are we going to get a better decision to do that?
Well, you don't think that there was that type of political influence when Volcker raised interest rates? It was there.
Sure, but because it was an independent Fed, he did not yield to it, and that's the question. Will there be a Federal Reserve chairman who is just as strong and who will be willing to withstand popular opinion? No.
Yeah, but what makes you think that anything is different? I mean, we're not changing anything. We're not changing policy. The policy is still going to be devised by the Federal Reserve.
The concern is this, that 2 days before the Fed meets to hike rates, some congressmen, and I wouldn't think it would be you in this instance, I think this would be potentially your bill acting sort of against what you want, which is 2 days before the meeting, some congressmen say, and the Fed is expected to hike rates, let's audit that because I really disagree with the plan to hike interest rates. And then ultimately, there are lots of audits when the Fed meets to hike rates, but none when the Fed meets to lower rates.
Yeah, but we can't do anything. The Congress won't have any authority. They just raise rates, and we'll find out what they said 6 months later. I think we're missing the real important part of politicizing the Fed. The people want stuff from the government, and the government doesn't have any money. So the government gives it to the people to get their votes, and they run up the deficit. So it's the deficit that puts the pressure on the Fed. So it's not just the Fed, you know, printing money and all. It's a system of government, of runaway government.
But that's Congress.
And get stuff for free.
That's Congress.
Yes, that's
right.
Congress is
the dollar, not the Fed.
I'm saying they have a lot of responsibility. I'm saying what I'm talking about isn't going to make it any worse. It's already bad. Because Congress, if they didn't produce any deficits, interest rates would probably be lower and it'd probably be savings. So it isn't just the Fed. Congress created the Fed, so we should have responsibility and auditing authority over the Fed. But the way it is now, there is a lot of political pressures on the Fed. But we're not even dealing with that. We're dealing with the fact, I want to know the names of the companies who get the money from the Fed, money they create out of thin air, and they buy up these securities, and how much they pay for them?
I don't want the audit to challenge that independence. Nothing I've heard, other than from Steve, really is that vain. The vain is we want to follow the money. We want a financial audit, not a psychological audit. And I'll take it a step farther. How can they banter around the independence of the Fed? Let me ask you a real simple question, Congressman. If you were the Treasury Department and you had to issue the kind of debt we do, do you think the Fed should keep interest rates high or low? You know, just to prove that there isn't a relationship there, just to prove there may be some independence, this audit would go a long way because I think you'd have a hard time defending that the Treasury and the Fed aren't in cahoots right now.
Well, I wouldn't presume what I think the Fed should do about interest rates because I don't believe the Fed should set interest rates. That's
have a
price fixing, and that's why we get into our – that's how we've gotten into our mess, by thinking that a few men in a secret room have the magic knowledge of knowing what interest rates should be. That's what creates the financial bubble. Interest rates are always artificially low, even when you're coming out of a recession.
There's no magic in any of
the Fed always keeps it artificially low.
Congressman, I don't get too in the weeds on this, but one of the things that the Fed probably complains about here is this issue, that when banks come to the window, they want to remove the stigma of a failing bank or a bank in trouble, not necessarily failing, but is in good standing, but needs to borrow, has a short-term liquidity problem. your bill would allow that name to be published, and that would kind of go against the issue of the anonymity that would remove the stigma out there. Is that
okay,
what you want?
What? Well, after 6 months. But if they're in bad trouble and there's a responsibility of government in this meddling, why should they hide information that is valuable to the people?
Okay.
I mean, that's deceitful and dishonest and immoral and corrupt to hide it. If it were private, that would become known immediately on an ongoing basis. They would have a, you know, 3-, 4-, 5-star program to indicate how solvent a bank is, and the people would know immediately each single bank instead of waiting and hiding the ill effects and making sure all the banks fail at one time and all the mortgage companies fail at one time. They collectivize all these programs. That's why the financial bubble is so big and is actually international rather than just domestic, as we all know.
All right. Thank you, Ron. It's great to see you. Congressman, now, I assume it's – is it – you're in Clute, Texas? It's not Clute, is it? I mean, you don't pronounce it like a French person, do you?
No, it's just Clute, Texas. That's where my office is here in
Clute.
Texas.
All right, I saw it. I just want to make sure. I don't want to mispronounce it like it's Clute. I didn't think it was. Thank you. Congressman, and we'll see you again soon, right? Well, I've never gotten you to talk about health care. As a doctor, you must love this health care bill, don't you? Which version is your favorite?
It's wonderful because it's going to reduce the deficit. That's what I like about it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, exactly.
We're going to get free medical care for 30 million people, and it's going to reduce the deficit.
It's going to go down.
So I think that really gives credibility to Washington and the whole.
We need to get those guys to help my bears. They can really spin that kind of magic.
All right.
Okay, that was part two. I extended my time on here because I didn't realize this HR bill. This H.R. 1207 bill was good, and I wanted to continue to go on just so that I could get all this out at one time. And I know that sounds like, because I want to move on to conclusion next week on the Federal Reserve so that we can move on to other subjects. But I just want to I played part two first, but I meant to play part one first. So here's part one, just a second here. And I'm sorry about my little... Well, I'm not sorry because that's what
for the Congress to get into monetary policy is just absolutely inexcusable. We can't handle fiscal policy, but now we want to manage monetary policy. One of the great strengths of our nation is independent Fed. And this idea that's coming out of the House, which is populist fervor, pandering populism is what it is absolutely wrong.
That was Senator Judd Gregg on Friday responding to Congressman Ron Paul's efforts to impose tighter scrutiny on the Fed. Here now with more is Representative Ron Paul, member of the Financial Services Committee. Good to see you, Congressman. And Senator Gregg likes
you.
He says you guys are buddies and everything. Yeah. But I mean, the one thing, it's hard to disagree with Congress. Look what you've given us for fiscal policy. Now you want to run monetary policy. That sounds insane.
Well, that isn't the purpose of the amendment. It had nothing to do with running monetary policy. It was trying to find out what the Fed's been doing and how they've been spending the money and who benefits. But if you wanted to be a strict constitutionalist, there's a lot more defense of the Congress being involved with defending the value of the currency rather than delivering this responsibility over the Fed. And pandering, well, in a sense, I do. I pander to the people because it's the people that are behind this thing. I mean, 75% of the people right now want an audit. Because of the pressure of the people in the Congress, we have 313 members of Congress that have co-signed this legislation. Even during the debate last week, we had 4 new people sign on at the last minute, realizing that this is very, very important, and the people deserve to know what's going on, how they spend the money, what assets they buy, how much they pay. Are they paying market rates? Are they buying up illiquid assets that aren't worth anything and dumping them on the taxpayer through the creation of new money? So I would say that the momentum is on the side of the people. It's against secrecy. The Federal Reserve, they say they want independence. Every time they say independence, everybody defends the Fed. They say, we need independence. What they're talking about is secrecy. And what I'm talking about is transparency.
Well, I assume you're going to be a big backer of this this Barney Frank bill, then, since that's where your amendment is. You're going to vote with a capital I.
Well, if you look at my record, I don't generally vote for bad stuff in order to hope to get good stuff in. But the process is that this bill had to go on to the major reform package, and that's the way where Barney Frank wanted it to be. But my record doesn't show that I vote for bad things.
So you're going to vote against that bill, even though it has your amendment?
Well, that's the way I've done it in the past, and I doubt very much if I'm going to change my tradition. If you think about it, though, as important as the Fed is to me, and auditing the Fed, it's crucial. I've worked on this for a long time. But if you look at the regulations in this bill, I mean, long term, it's going to take a long time to get the results of the audit. The audit, you know, a long time to me is a couple years. Who knows what's going to happen to the dollar and the crisis in a couple years? And if you get hit, I mean, the financial community gets hit with that regulatory bill, I mean, it's going to be secondary. So I would say that the audit of the Fed can't save us from super regulations. Part of the reason we're in this crisis is not only because we spend too much and borrow too much and print too much, we regulate too much. Every time we have a crisis, we go to, oh, didn't have enough regulation. The Fed creates the problem with all their mischief, and they cause all the imbalances and the malinvestment and encourages the debt. And we say, oh, if we just had regulation to tell the businessman what to do, we're going to save ourselves from ourselves. And you know, this is what we did after Enron. Enron failed, so we passed Sarbanes-Oxley, a horrible bill. Three of us voted against that bill. Now the business community is complaining about it, you know, and what it did to undermine our businesses. And this is, we're embarked on the same course again, more regulations, thinking regulations will compensate for the ill-advised Federal Reserve policy. The Federal Reserve, I mean, how can they deserve any credibility? Stable prices? Prices for medical care and education stable? No.
Ron
prices
Paul.
Prices stable in stocks? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Rick Santoli, you know.
Full-on places. Hi, Rick. How you doing?
They cut off Mr. Gregg's next sentence when you heard that piece opening up. His next sentence was, we have to maintain independence, otherwise how's the Fed going to protect the dollar? I almost choked when I heard that.
Yeah, well, you ought to. I mean, look at what the dollar's doing. What kind of a record does the Fed have? And, of course, if you look at monetary history, not of the last year or two or a decade or two, or look at monetary history of 6,000 years, gold is money. Gold measures the value of currencies. And right now, gold is telling us, in spite of the fact that the gold price is rigged by central banks and various entities, gold is telling us, you know, that the dollar is in danger, great danger, and we're in worse shape than we were in the 70s, and it was rather chaotic then, so we're moving into a very, very dangerous era, according to what the gold price is telling us.
Congressman, I think you were quoted a while ago in the Wall Street Journal saying that this bill here is a stepping stone to ending the Fed. Is that your intention here?
Well, that's my intention, is to get rid of the Fed. I don't say this is the step. I mean, the whole purpose is to expose it. But I have made a statement. If the American people are upset now, wait till they find out what the Fed's been doing. And wait till they destroy the dollar. I won't end the Fed. They're not going to pass a law to manage monetary policy or end the Fed. That's not going to happen. But the Fed's going to self-destruct because they're going to destroy the dollar. And they're going to have to devise a new system. And they're going to have to either come up with something to restrain the monetary authorities from just creating money out of thin air. Last week they bought up $75 billion worth of Treasury bills, and foreigners bought up $11 billion. I mean, this can't continue. No wonder they're losing confidence in the dollar, and it's going to continue. I think maybe people are buying stocks because they're not confident in the dollar. They just, you know, go over and buy something that maybe has a real value.
Congressman, can I ask you, how do you respond to the critics that say this would result in politicizing the Fed and interfere in their ability to manage the economy for long-term success?
Well, I would say they've totally failed in managing the economy. They gave us the crisis. So no, they just want secrecy. And if they talk about politicizing, you know, I put two extra paragraphs in there to explicitly say that we're not going to meddle. We don't want to see any information for 180 days. If you want to talk about politicizing something, look at what they're doing today. I mean, do you think Goldman Sachs would have any influence on the Federal Reserve and other companies? There's a tremendous – the president always has influence on the Fed because he reappoints, you know, the chairman.
But Congressman,
and now we don't know
– That was Ron Paul. That was a November 23rd on the Squawk Box, which I didn't watch. But I'm glad I found this. That was part one and two. I played them reversing themselves about
Ron Paul's bill, the H.R. 1207 that we've been talking about, and how important it is for this to take place. Let me explain something to you. I'm not a Republican, nor am I a libertarian. I'm not. I'm just about what needs to be done to help us get out of this and to get the message out to you guys on what's important for us as American people. excuse me. I have another segment I want to play for you, and I hope you guys don't think that I'm doing this because I don't want to talk. I'm doing this because they have more information. They can explain this quickly and much better than I can with this. And why did I pick this subject? I picked this subject so that I can learn more about what's going on and so that I can get this out to you guys. I think this is a very important bill. I really didn't know anything about Representative Ron Paul. Actually, he's a doctor, until I start digging into this. And I'm really hoping that whatever comes out of here is that it's going to help us and not hurt us in the long run. Because if it does hurt us in the long run, then it was all for nothing, and we don't want this bill to be passed and being lied to at the same time, because I think a lot of that is what's going to happen, is that even if they pass the bill, that a lot of lying is going to happen. Here's one with Ron Paul's H.R. 1207 causes Randy Cosner, if he comes back up again, to forget what he wants to say, I guess. Just a second, I'm going to let us hear this one.
Probably know the Fed has been under fire, from critics blasting its monetary policy to Congressman Ron Paul's push to broaden oversight. Our next guest brings a very unique perspective to the issues at hand. Randy Cosner is a former Federal Reserve Board governor. He is currently a professor at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. In fact, he is the Norman R. Bobbins Professor of Economics. And, Randy, we just had Norm on the show about 10 minutes ago.
It's great. I just saw him a moment ago.
You did? Okay, great. Well, Randy, thank you for joining us today. It's wonderful to have you here.
Delighted.
As you know, the Fed has been under attack. There are a lot of things that are moving right now, in particular the House vote to go ahead and push this proposal from Ron Paul to audit the Fed. What would that mean for the Fed?
Well, first of all, the Fed, with the exception of monetary policy, is subject to JAL audit. So it's a bit of a misnomer to think that the Fed somehow is now not subject to audit and this would allow audits to occur. The real change here is changing an exemption that the Congress, it was the genius of the Congress to put this in to make monetary policy independent. That would change under this. The monetary policy decisions would be subject to GAO audit. That is subject to potentially congressional control, and that's really problematic.
You know, Randy, first of all, I want to know why it's problematic. Also, the Fed was given a lot of these powers, I think, back around 1976. Why were those powers put in to begin with, and why do you think that this would be a horrible thing for the Fed if it was stripped?
Well, actually, some of the powers, like the emergency powers that were exercised during the last few years, were given in the 1930s. Because Congress is very upset that the Fed just stood by as the money supply collapsed by a third, banking system collapsed by a third, and GDP collapsed by a third in the early 1930s. So the Congress wanted the Fed to be able to act and explicitly gave it these powers. But they also said that it should be subject to audit with the exception of monetary policy choices, because the Congress set the Fed up to be independent. Over the last 20, 30 years, almost all central banks have moved in a more independent direction. The benefit of that has been lower inflation, better outcomes. And it's really ironic that some of the members of Congress who are most concerned about the potential for high inflation would be the ones who are promoting an amendment that would make the Fed less independent and probably give us less good outcomes.
Randy, you've been in the room making those votes to raise or lower rates. People may not understand, and frankly, it's hard for me to understand, why an audit would affect policy. All Ron Paul wants to do is to understand how the policy was made. Why is an audit a piece of intimidation?
No, I think it is a piece of intimidation. And the chairman and the rest of the board members testify very frequently before Congress. I don't think there's been any chairman who's testified as frequently as Ben Bernanke has. That is a standard way in which there is accountability, but still independence. It's very important for central bank policy to be made without congressional interference. As you can imagine, there's a lot of pressure because of very high unemployment rates for interest rates to be kept low.
Randy, hold on. Why isn't audit interference? All they want to know is how you made the decision. Why isn't audit interference?
No, but and those questions are asked during testimony. The minutes are published three weeks afterwards. There's actually much more disclosure and much more accountability about a lot of Fed decisions than it is in almost every other branch of government.
So why would the GAO coming in and finding out how you made that decision and, I guess, figuring out why it was the right decision, why would that be interference? I'm sorry to keep coming back to this, Randy, but I'm not
wondering
the way that you as a policymaker would have your decision-making changed by the audit.
Well, it gives a lot of opportunity for Congress to get into the details of the decision-making. The whole point and genius of the way Congress set up the Fed was to allow that decision-making to be made separately from immediate congressional pressures. That's the whole point of having an independent central bank. That's the reason one of the reasons why inflation outcomes are so much better when you have an independent central bank than when you have a less independent central bank that's much more subject to congressional interference. I think you just have to look at the history around the world to see the benefits of having a more independent central bank.
Randy, question that I have for you regarding the Fed's independence is, you know, over the last, certainly even in 06 to 09, we've seen some Fed decisions that we've been concerned about, particularly in terms of issues concerning Greenspan and that and the like, and keeping interest rates low, mortgages, et cetera. When we move and look at, and I can understand Congress's view of monetary policy, why is it such that you feel that the interference, as opposed to just knowledge of folks knowing what's going on, is a bad thing?
No, but there's a lot of information that's given. I don't see the benefit of congressional GAO audit of those specifics. That just gives the opportunity for direct interference. Right now, there's very frequent testimony that the chairman gives. The minutes are put out. All that information is provided. I really don't see what the additional information would be with the GAO audit. There's a difference between independence and accountability. The Fed is certainly accountable. That's why there's very frequent testimony and information given and minutes that are put out. As I said, there are very few other areas of government when there are important meetings, that the minutes are published very soon after. Usually it's years and years before that comes out.
You know, Randy, real quickly, though, what is your fear of what happens next? If there is an audit that comes from the GAO, that would lead to what type of situations that you've seen in the past?
Well, I think, as I said, look to other countries that had much less independent central banks, where the Congress could have much more direct interference, where you would have things exactly like this. And so you roll back the clock 20 years, you see much worse inflation outcomes. And that's the real concern that I have, that we would get inflation outcomes that just aren't nearly as good as we have had in the U.S. and as other countries have had as they've made their central banks more independent. I think that's the real question that we have. We have an independent central bank that's quite accountable.
All right, Randy, we want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Now, as you can see, he didn't answer the question that they asked. What would the audit do? How would the audit interfere with the Federal Reserve altogether and the way that the central bank works? It wouldn't interfere. It's the ideal that they don't truly want us to know what's going on with the money. And if we don't stand behind this bill, I think we're headed for a lot of stuff that's not supposed to happen in America. I am a taxpaying, working citizen, just like a lot of us. A lot of us who are fortunate to still have jobs, we pay taxes. They tax us heavily. I am married and I have no dependents. I am taxed heavily because of those things, because of those factors. So I'm very curious about what's going on. I'm going to stay curious and I'm going to keep coming back to this same situation and these same comments and these same subjects because I want to know what's going on and why is this such a big deal that we can't audit them and find out where I'm at. And I really believe that there is going to be a lot of lies coming out of this. Regardless of what we look at, it's still going to be a lot of lies. We will, let's see what I want to do with this. Excuse me. What I would like to do is I would like to continue on this subject. We have about 15 more minutes to go, so I'm kind of finding different things to talk about in here. Let's see. Let's play this one. I'm curious about this whole situation. The more and more I'm looking at it, the more and more I'm researching, the more and more I'm finding stuff out that I didn't know. This one is
surprising to me that it's
called The Fed Under Fire. So just one second here. Let's hear
it. So much money. The Federal Reserve is the black hole in American democracy.
All we have to say is, what do they have to hide?
The Federal Reserve had a responsibility to provide oversight for the conduct of banks. They didn't do that.
It's known as one of the most powerful and secretive institutions in Washington. And now, President Obama wants to hand the Federal Reserve even more power.
I am proposing that the Federal Reserve be granted new authority and accountability for regulating bank holding companies and other large firms that pose a risk to the entire economy in the event of failure.
The President's plan to make the Fed the systemic risk regulator has raised eyebrows on Capitol Hill.
The President's financial reform proposal has included broad and sweeping increases in Chairman Bernanke or his successor's powers. And if that power is used, what will be the oversight?
I believe that we have to adequately audit the Federal Reserve before any consideration is given to making the Federal Reserve a systemic risk regulator.
A growing number in Congress are calling for the Federal Reserve to be fully audited for the first time in its history. It's a movement that started with one Washington outsider whose ideas have largely been ignored by the mainstream of both political parties. Texas Congressman Ron Paul. He's been trying to audit the Federal Reserve for years without success. But in the last few months, his bill to open up the Fed's books has spawned a rare bipartisan coalition of more than 250 co-sponsors, a majority of the House of Representatives.
The best answer I have about defending my bill is asking a question. Why not?
My concern about the legislation is that if the GAO is auditing not only the operational aspects of our programs and the details of the programs, but is making judgments about our policy decisions, that would effectively be a takeover of monetary policy by the Congress, a repudiation of the independence of the Federal Reserve, which would be highly destructive to the stability of the financial system, the dollar, and our national economic situation.
Despite these dire warnings against having an audit, Fed challengers in Congress aren't flinching.
This is a situation where the Federal Reserve is out of control. Since September, it's been doing things it never did before in its history.
With the help of a rule from the days of Woodrow Wilson that gave the Federal Reserve vast authority to lend money during unusual and exigent circumstances, the Fed has doled out more than $1 trillion to financial institutions without consulting Congress. When freshman Congressman Alan Grayson asked the Fed's Inspector General how much of that money the Federal Reserve had lost since the crisis began, he was surprised to find out she didn't know.
So are you telling me that nobody at the Federal Reserve is keeping track on a regular basis of the losses that it incurs on what is now a $2 trillion portfolio?
Until we actually look at the program and have the information, we are not in a position to say whether there are losses or to respond in any other way.
And I think it was shocking to me and to other people to see that the Inspector General could not account for $1 trillion of cash that had been handed out by the Federal Reserve in the course of just the past few months.
So Grayson began rallying his fellow Democrats to support Ron Paul's bill and call for more oversight of the Federal Reserve.
The fact is that the American people want to know more of the secrets of the temple, as the book was before you were born, The Secrets of the Temple. It was required reading in my day.
Nancy Pelosi said the public wants to know more about the secrets of the temple. And my response to that is, if the public does learn more, they will be outraged more.
Journalist and author William Grider says the Fed's darkest secrets are conflicts of interest stemming from its deep ties to the financial elite.
The Federal Reserve, from its origins, is very, very close to the biggest banks and financial houses in the country. Always has been and always has governed with that in mind.
The Fed has refused to release the names of all the banks it's given money to, but some of the names that have leaked out have caused concern. And as stories emerge of how the banks got their money, some are questioning the Fed's close relationship with Wall Street.
One example that I think is particularly dubious, Jamie Dimon, CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, is involved in the bailout of Bear Stearns. If that firm failed, one of the people who loses first is J.P. Morgan Chase. So he is also saved by the bailout of Bear Stearns. So he graciously agrees to take over Bear Stearns if the Federal Reserve will put up $30 billion to cover his losses. What I find troubling is that Jamie Dimon sits on the board of directors of the New York Federal Reserve Bank. Tim Geithner, who was then president of the New York Federal Reserve Bank and is now Treasury Secretary, was bargaining with his own board member on this terms of this deal. So I think what's happened in this crisis is that people all over the country have been able to see there's something illegitimate about this. They may not be able to put their finger on it, but this doesn't feel right. And some people are getting downright angry, and that includes a lot of members of Congress.
Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth?
The whole truth. And now one House committee is holding its own investigation into the controversial deal that the Fed brokered between Bank of America and the failing financial giant Merrill Lynch. According to documents acquired during the investigation, Fed Chairman Bernanke threatened to fire Bank of America CEO Ken Lewis when Lewis considered backing out of the deal.
The Fed's decision-making process in the Bank of America Merrill Lynch merger makes the case for a significant increase in accountability at the Fed.
The next hurdle for the plan to audit the Fed is the House Financial Services Committee, chaired by Barney Frank. Although Frank has praised the Fed's work to keep credit flowing during the economic crisis, he's pledged to include a Fed audit in the major financial regulation bill he plans to finish this summer.
There will be substantially increased auditing. We don't want anything that would endanger the integrity of monetary policy. But in general, the operations of the Fed, the money they take in, all that will be very much subject to audit.
Despite the momentum, the Fed's not quitting the fight. It just created a new position for Enron's former head lobbyist, Linda Robertson, to push back against congressional critics.
I think it's unfortunate that they're struggling so hard to keep this secret. We need to know exactly who got the money, what the terms are, all the details of this, because this is a democracy. Can't hand out $1 trillion of the people's money and keep everyone in the dark about it. That's ridiculous. Nobody has that kind of power in a democracy in a constitutional country.
To me, that was very alarming news right there. That's why I say it is always good to do your research to find out what's going on. Very enlightening for me. I don't know about you guys, but it was very enlightening to me to know this is what's going on. This is why we have to push forward with this bill. That's why we have to get our representatives to push to make this bill go through. I was looking at the list of people who representatives that actually is co-sponsoring this bill, and I was very interested in a lot of the names that are on here. Got about 5 more minutes to go. Just to name a few, this started back in February. This bill came out in February. Yeah, and let's see, the first person to sign off on this bill was February 26th was Representative of Georgia. His name is Paul Browen was the first one I see on here. Then there was Representative Burton Dan of Indiana that was a co-sponsor of the bill. In March, there was Representative John Carter of Texas. Capito Shelley Moore of West Virginia. Representative Childers Travis of Mississippi. Representative Chu Judy of California. So we have a lot of people. Like I said, it was 311 names on this list right here alone. So I would like to conclude with this for right now so that we can move on to conclude. So next week we'll talk about the conclusion of, the Federal Reserve, the history on the Federal Reserve. So I have some more research to do. I'm going to try to go to their website, and I advise you guys to go to the website, the FederalReserve.gov website, and look more into what we're doing, what they're doing with our money, or why America is so cashed out, in other words, bankrupt, in other words. It says, I'm going to read this real quick to you. It says, history of lies. During the time of the Babylonian captivity of Judah, a man named Jacob Edjabai became the founding father of modern banking. While Judah was in captivity, Jacob began a business of loaning out money for a rate of interest. During the reign of King Kadugonal of Babylon, a new phenomenon appeared on the scene, which Jacob Edjabai played a major part, and that was the invention of private banking. There were two prominent families at this time. They were the Edjabai family and the Arainu family. These two families are not a figment of imagination, as their names have appeared in many cuneiform tablets discovered by the archaeologists. It is believed that the Edjabai family was taken with the first captivity into Assyria and then later migrated to Babylon. At the time of the 70-year captivity, Jacob Edjabai already had an ongoing private banking business in which he collected large sums of interest. Now we have secular insight as to why many of the Jews did not want to return with Nehemiah to rebuild the temple at Jerusalem. By the time of the end of the captivity, many of the others who were in captivity with Edjabai families learned this evil business practice and began to set up shop. A good example of this are the money changers, which the Lord Jesus Christ threw out of the temple, as a friend of mine said to me many times ago. Christ drove the money changers from the temple and was crucified 4 days later. So, do you see how important it is for us to keep up with all of this and to know what's going on with our money? This is back in before Christ's time that these two families were prominent. So the Federal Reserve has a long history and how it became where it's at now. We have to understand that the Federal Reserve is not a government entity. It is a private business. We have to keep that in mind. And that this bill, H.R. 1207, is an audit for transparency. Those two things we need to keep in, in mind, and we need to continue to listen and find out what's going on. I will continue to do this, and like I said, next week we'll be doing the conclusion of the history of the Federal Reserve. Hopefully everything will turn out better than it did this time. I picked up 90 minutes on this one because I wanted to get all this out. As you can see right now, we are at that point, so we need to continue the momentum of making this happen. I would like to say good night to all, happy Thanksgiving, and you can catch me on sensible64@yahoo.com, or you can email me at chocolatelady64 on Blog Talk Radio. I also have a new website. It's samanthaplace.net. I'll be there, too, and you can go in there and look around. I'm still working on it, but I still have it up, so you can look at it. I want to say good night, happy Thanksgiving again. This is Chocolate Lady 64 signing off, and good night.